Grab a beverage, settle in. When you're ready, we'll begin. Joe and Michael and a guest or two are gonna talk comic books with you.
It's the Casual Comics Cast with your hosts, Joe and Michael.
Sorry, Matt. All right, so welcome to the Casual Comics Cast. Hey, it's me, Joe, with my buddy Mark today. Mark, what's going on?
Hello, Joe. How are you?
Good. And we're here today to talk about Mark's favorite topic, Spider-Man, right?
Yes.
So
100% yes.
I mean, it's not like it just came out, but I was excited about the Spider-Man No Way Home trailer. So I was like, let's just do a whole podcast about Spidey. So we're going to talk about a book. We're going to talk about Spidey villains. We'll just chat in general about Peter Parker and his amazing friends.
Love it. Love it.
So, Mark, tell me, you know, you've been on before, but where did your love of all things Spider-Man start?
Yeah. So I think I was probably 11 years old, and I stayed over at my cousin's house a lot, and he first introduced me to comics in general and the whole concept of comic books. And so my love started there, and he gave me some of his comics.
What's the first Spider-Man comic you remember reading? What was the plot?
Oh, wow, that's a good one, Joe. I think the first one I ever remember was probably right before Secret Wars.
Yeah.
One. Okay. So right, I'm trying to think of the storyline that was right then and there. But let's just say Secret Wars, because that was like what, in 84?
85,
yeah. So I would have been 12 at the time, but I can't remember the story right before that. I think it was, and we're gonna get into it, the Spider-Man was quote unquote killed by Kraven, the hunter.
By Kraven the
hunter. Dead and buried, right? So that's the first real memorable story thread is who, where is Spider-Man? Like, there was a big, and then on the front of the comic, he was blank. He wasn't anywhere. And you're like, where is he?
Right. Nice.
Yes.
So what we read today is a graphic novel. It's from a few years ago. It is called Spider-Man Life Story. And I will let Jeff come in here and explain the plot.
In 1962's Amazing Fantasy number 15, 15-year-old Peter Parker was bitten by a radioactive spider and became the Amazing Spider-Man. Published in 2019, Spider-Man Life Story tells the tale of Peter Parker's adventures in the 57 years following that fateful spider bite. Chip Zdarsky and Spider-Man legend Mark Bagley unite to spin a unique Spidey tale, telling an entire life story of Spider-Man from beginning to end, set against the key events of the decades through which he lived. From the real-world Vietnam War, to Marvel's Secret Wars and Civil War, all the way through what just might be a 72-year-old Spider-Man's final mission, prepare to watch Spider-Man spin his webs through 57 years of groundbreaking history and find out what happens to him and those he loves the most. It's all here in Spider-Man Life Story.
And it sounds pretty awesome, right?
Who's Jeff?
The magic of podcasting, Mark. We pretend Jeff is doing that live.
Oh, got it.
He will be inserted later. Or actually earlier.
Early. Wait a minute.
Too much. So
you selected Spider-Man Life Story. Zero.
It was an interesting concept that Marvel has now carried on to. I think they're doing Fantastic Four Life Story now. So it's an interesting conceit that tracks Spider-Man. And you haven't. I mean, you don't keep up with comics. I'm just a casual comics guy, but you keep up with comics even less than that, Mark. So Spidey's like an old favorite of yours. Overall, how do you feel about this telling of Spider-Man?
Well, I'm going to start with an apology to you because you lost a bet.
Two bets
on our favorite football teams that are in the same division. We won't get into, but the winner got a bunch of swag and you gave me this book along with a bunch of others. And my apology is that I didn't read it sooner because you asked me to read it, and I did, and it is amazing.
Amazing.
It's spectacular. It's web of. Oh, wait a minute. That's not a. But it is well done, Joe. It is it's a great book, and being a fan of Spider-Man, it was like reliving moments of the past of Spider-Man. So if you are a Spider-Man fan, I 100% recommend it.
Yeah, so give a little recap of how the story is told, right? It's sort of Spider-Man through the decades.
It is. So it starts when the first appearance of Spider-Man happens, which is in the 1960s.
Right.
And it takes you through a story thread of each decade, you know, 60s all the way through the current century and decade. And each decade really hits on the greatest hits of the stories from the comic books of that decade.
Right. Except this is
the way I would summarize
it. A little bit of the conceit being he actually ages, unlike.
But he actually, right. So, but it's the story threads from the books, but unlike the comic books where he's always anywhere between like 15 and 30,
right,
depending on whatever story you read throughout. You're right. He actually ages in real time, if you will, with every decade. So it starts with a young 15-year-old kid in the 60s, and then he's actually an old man by the 2010s, I think, is what the last decade was.
Yeah, and it actually touches on like a lot of cultural stuff from the time too, right? So
yes.
The 1960s, when he's young Spider-Man, it's the Vietnam War is going on. And they do some interesting swap-ups, because at that point, Gwen Stacy is sort of the love of his life. No Mary Jane around at that point in this story. And it's like Flash Thompson's going off to war.
Right.
And you get a hint at what those characters, because I don't remember in the comic books, and maybe it's just me not being aware of it when I was that age, them dealing with some of the social issues and talking about, you know, hey, the war's going on, and what would, you know, hey, if you're a teenage boy, you might actually be worried about being drafted, and should you go fight in the war? And he sees like Captain America. Maybe Captain America is going to fight.
Right, right. And in the 60s, one in particular, he makes what the common thread is this flawed hero of he's always questioning the decisions that he's making for the greater responsibility. And in the 60s, it's turning Norman Osborn in. You know, right. it's he's the baddie in the story, and it's like he forgets that he's a bad guy without spoiling too much. But Spider-Man's like, do I turn him in? Do I not? And he ends up turning him in because he thinks that's the greater good. And then he's always questioning it. And it actually comes up later in his life about the decision that he made that affects that. But the Cap one is interesting because he ends up doing what you think Cap would do, is he ends up fighting on both sides.
Right. He's just trying to save lives.
He's just trying to save lives. It doesn't matter if it's a Vietnam life or an American life. They're all human lives. And it's a totally a Cap thing. It's what he would do.
Right. I thought that was amazing. And then it transitions into the 70s, right? So he's a little older. You hit 1977, but it continues. So like now Captain America, because he was fighting like really both sides to just protect lives, he's like, he's on the run now.
Right.
It follows, you know, what's going on in the 70s, where it just sort of picks up. There's this, you might be, I don't know if you're more of a Spider-Man fan there. And like at this point, he's married to Gwen Stacy, and he goes to this lab, and there's this dude with the glasses, the old guy. I don't remember him from older Spider-Man comics. I'm like, he has to be a character that appeared in Spider-Man comics before, because the way they tell the story, it's like, I think you hit it on the head. It's like Spider-Man's greatest hits of
yep.
what was going on in that decade. I don't remember, and maybe I just wasn't reading the comics at that point. Do you remember that?
Well, there's a few things in that leading up to that point, Joe. It was, first of all, I wrote in my notes, Uncle Otto.
You don't remember that?
No,
Dr.
but I
Octopus
just
Octopus
I
married
do,
Aunt May in the comics.
Yes, yes. That's what I'm like. I totally forgot that part. So he's got Uncle Otto in the 70s. And actually, MJ's with Harry, which is what was in the comics before Gwen. So Gwen and actually Spider-Man hook up.
Right.
And so that whole story is there. But
was she his girlfriend before MJ in the comics? I know the
yes.
death of Gwen Stacy is a big deal, but I thought maybe I didn't realize she was before Mary Jane.
They were almost a thing. They were not as serious as MJ and Peter Parker ever were, but it was his first love, and she did die. And then the parallels on the death were interesting with the whole clone thing in the book. But But yeah, so she was. She was his first love, and she died, and it just they had her die in the 70s, just like in the comics, the death of Gwen Stacy.
Yeah. So what were the other highlights of the 70s?
Club 54 was great. I loved Sue Storm left Richards. For Namor. I love that.
It's like no matter what comic book you read, Sue's always going to leave. There should be like a what
for
if.
For Namor.
Marvel's that's what right. if. What if Sue never left Reed?
Exactly. What if Reed Richards cared about his family more than intellect? Like, that never happens.
It's incomprehensible.
I'm cursed with this knowledge, Peter. You shouldn't do what I did. You know what? Hate your family?
Isn't that creepy that is like such a touchstone in Marvel Comics? So that's probably a moment the Watcher was there for. Because it was like a big deal. It changed the course of Marvel history of when she left him. And the Watcher's like, go, Sue, you go, girl.
That's a vast new reality.
You're going to get some underwater love.
Those were the big highlights that I remember from the 70s were all those pieces. But that was when and Harry, of course, had a lot of fallout because, again, that's the consequences of his turning his dad in. Of Harry's now like, my dad's this person in prison and he's all messed up. So and he's friends with Peter. So now he blames himself for turning in Norman because his son's all messed up because of what he did.
Right, and he shows up in a costume called the Black Goblin. Was the Black Goblin a thing?
Yeah.
It was? I thought it was the Hobgoblin.
No, it was not. I was saying, no, it was not a thing. I think it was Hobgoblin, what was a thing, which is a Harry Osborn thing.
The twist, yep. and then the clone.
The clones get introduced in the 70s. I don't remember cloning happening in the 70s comics, but it must have because it was a theme in there.
I think it was a 90s thing, but they had to like,
they
can't just bring it up in the 90s. They got to show you a little bit of it in the 70s.
Yeah.
But then that's where they change a little bit of the death of Gwen Stacy. Spider-Man and MJ, of course, because they're moving forward in time, they don't really get together until they're like much older.
Right. I think until the 80s and 90s in here. But then the 70s, you're right. It's Uncle Otto, not Uncle Otto, the guy that you showed me in the comics, the it's not Connors, but it was somebody else. He swaps out the real Gwen Stacy with a clone, and then actually that's the one that ends up dying, and that's the whole death thing twist.
He's like,
that is really creepy.
He's like, I want to have a Gwen for my own.
Well, and he's like, I'm going to keep the real one in some type of stasis for whatever reason. I'm like, what is that? I love her so much, I'm going to put her in suspended animation for an indeterminate amount of time.
It's Gwen Stacy, mint in box.
That's right. and he gave the Memorex or backup copy to Peter,
right?
And he thought she was the real thing, and then they all blew up in the fire, and then he realizes actually it was the real Gwen that got blown up. That was kind of the end of that era.
So then they hit the 80s. And the 80s is
and that by far, Joe. See, that gets back to what we were talking. Like, I got so emotional and so excited because, again, greatest hits of the 80s, Secret Wars, Kraven, Symbiote, like those were my greatest hits. That was my pinnacle, peak of my nerd powers in Spider-Man, and that was my favorite. They're all great, but that was the highlight, was the 80s for me. Yep.
Because I thought it was cool, like that big splash page of Secret Wars, except he's older, yes, like fighting in Secret Wars. Now he's like 30-something years old, and he's in the Secret Wars.
Yes.
And I saw on the splash page, too, it was like, guess who he was fighting? Uncle Otto was there.
Uncle Otto. It was good.
It is. That splash page is the same heroes and villains who fought in the Secret Wars comic, except they look a little different because, like, you can see they aged up Reed Richards because he's supposed to be a lot older, right? Yeah.
Yes. Like, yeah. Reed looks like an old man, but you're right. They aged up some people. And it's pretty cool how they did that. Yeah.
So I won't get your in. If you like this, they're doing the same thing with Fantastic Four, and it's kind of interesting because when they get into like the what's supposed to be like the 90s with Reed Richards and 2000s where he's really old, it's like he looks totally young. He looks totally normal, and then they show him waking up in bed and he looks all old, and it's just that he's using his stretchy powers to stretch his face back to look like a young guy again.
In the life story for Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a total good use case for that.
Yeah, he's just like, he's like,
skip the Botox.
I can look young forever. I just stretched my skin in the right way.
man.
Yeah,
it's great.
You get the symbiote, you get him, you know, picking that thing up. He's wearing some crazy web armor at this point too, because as he gets older, he's got to like enhance himself. And I thought it was the cool twist with the symbiote where like Reed Richards is like, I got some bad news for you. This is an alien symbiote. He's like, dude, I know.
Yeah, I've been trying to figure this out for a while.
Right. And he kind of tells him, he's like, I'm being careful with it. He's like, but I'm not as young as I used to be, and I'm actually more powerful with this suit on, so I'm going to use it.
It actually makes a lot more sense in the life story versus the real one, because he's like, it makes me stronger and I need it because I'm older.
Right.
So I actually like that angle in the Venom startup here. So yeah, I agree.
And then there's a creepy nuclear war. It's frozen. That was creepy.
Because he had to witness everybody get vaporized, so he stayed in his light state or whatever.
It's interesting, and Chip Zdarsky writes a lot of comics that I really like, and he approaches things in an interesting way. So like, it's a very, I don't know, it's not realistic, but it's a different take on like what would have really happened on Earth in the 1980s if all the greatest, strongest superheroes from the United States vanished, but not from any of the other countries. And like, hey, perfect time to launch a nuclear attack on the United States.
Right.
So that was,
yeah,
that,
he is a good storyteller. I agree.
That was crazy. And so, yeah, Vision witnessed this nuclear explosion. He's just like frozen in an intangible state forever. And then what do you think of your two favorite villains maybe coming together?
Oh yeah, that's really great. You talking about like Venom and Kraven, or?
Yeah, he's fighting Venom, yeah. But it's not Eddie Brock.
I know. Yeah. It's Ben Reilly. Wait, who's Ben Reilly?
No, but when he's fighting it, it's like old man Kraven is attached to the symbiotes.
To symbiote. And then the ending, that's, you know, going back, it you know, when you're a, I don't know, 13, 14-year-old kid, and you, the end of one story thread, which was the one I was mentioning on the Kraven one, where at the end, Kraven sticks a shotgun in his mouth and kills himself.
Yeah.
And it was a huge controversial thing. It's funny, in the moment I remember being like, well, he, you know, it makes sense to me mentally why he did that, but I guess Marvel took a lot of flack for that.
Sure.
for having that be in the story. But for me, and this is another reason why I think everybody should read comics, it puts it in a real way, but it introduces it and it creates awareness of it, of like, that's a real thing. Like, it's, you should talk about it. Like, it's important to talk about it. Like, I was mentally ill and he had a problem, and you should not be afraid of that. But, you know, I kept reading it because of it. So, yeah.
That's pretty awesome.
Not to get too serious for a minute, but yeah, that was I'm glad that they kept that in this life story, is my point.
Yeah. I mean, when they have big moments like that resonate with people, and it's how stories can influence people, how fictional characters can help you realize something that might seem abnormal is actually something that is normal and happens to a lot of people, and is not something that you need to steer away from or be afraid to talk about.
Exactly. That's exactly right. And you should create awareness and tolerance for these things. And I love how comics provides an opportunity for people to essentially talk about it by reading about it.
Right. No, that's, I think Marvel continues to do a good job with that too, even, you know.
Yeah. So I think they're trying to do it with the movies too, right? I mean, they're getting better at it with Shang-Chi, and some of those characters.
By the way, was that movie awesome or what?
I really liked it. It was good.
It's one of, it's, I've seen it three times. It's up there with my favorite.
Yeah, it's just, I would watch the bus fight scene 10 times.
Yeah.
Like, it is by far the best choreographed fight scenes in all the movies.
I think it's got one of the most sympathetic villains too, like his dad.
Yep.
Like, you totally get his motivation of what he's trying to do in a way that, like, with some other Marvel villains, I think Marvel's done a good job. They did with Black Panther of Killmonger trying to let people understand his motivations, but you really felt for Shang-Chi's dad. And
you did, and I think you hit it well. It wasn't that I didn't like it. It was a Marvel movie with a Disney theme.
Yeah.
I think you said that, and I think that's really well put. It's not a bad thing. It's just, it's about family. Every Disney movie is about family in some fashion, and Marvel like took from that theme and made it a Marvel movie.
Right. But I think that's, you know, it goes back to, and maybe it's that the, the movies tried to get too teenage boy and too masculine. But that stuff's all in the comic books. I mean, how many comic books did I sit there and read about Peter Parker trying to take care of his Aunt May, right?
Right. And I love that. Yep.
That's what motivated him, is his parents were there and his aunt and his uncle died. And he's like, I got to take care of, you know, this is my family.
I agree. It's one of the most influential parts of I think who I am, about no matter how much, like in Spider-Man's world, no matter how much power he had, like his personal life was still flawed and screwed up. And it kind of taught you about, it's important to have balance, and he might be this awesome superhero with great power and great responsibility, but he still like missed Thanksgiving dinner and, you know, missed his Aunt May and missed dates. And he's like, it's not all what it's cracked up to be, you know, like be careful what you wish for type thing. So it was the flawed hero is a Marvel thing. And that's what I love about all their characters, but Spider-Man especially.
You mean Superman doesn't have any flaws that are recognizable in any way?
It's like, who are you? I'm Clark Kent. Oh yeah, that's right. Superman. What's going on? Take your glasses.
No glasses.
Yeah, that's where I think that's a story for another day, but I think that's a big part of why copying Marvel, like DC just copying Marvel in the DC universe, cinematic, it doesn't work because they're just different, but they're trying to copy them and they're like, why isn't it working? It's like, because your heroes, other than Batman, are not flawed. Like, they're perfect. Wonder Woman's perfect, and you know, in terms of, you know, personal life and regular life, and even the Batman to a degree is kind of perfect if you think about Bruce Wayne. But they don't have flawed heroes.
Yeah, it's rare. It's rare.
They have great villains. DC has great villains.
They have
amazing villains. But like, yeah, their heroes
ones?
Are
like, which ones are your favorite villains?
Well, I'm just saying in terms of Batman specifically. Yeah. I suppose not all of them. I wouldn't necessarily call Brainiac the best villain around.
Don't slag on Brainiac. Donovan's going to kick your butt, dude.
He is. He's going to help me. He's going to hate me. But
doesn't he have a Brainiac?
I mean, I like
on
Lex
one of
Luthor,
his shows?
I suppose. I think so. I guess Lex Luthor is good, but pretty much the entire Rogues Gallery of Batman is awesome.
Flash, too. Flash has some.
No, that's true. That's where you're right. So there you go. You've got better villains on the DC side.
There you go. That's a thing. Done.
Yep. That's a thing.
Spider-Man in the 90s.
So that's the clone stuff. So it was probably of all the decades my least favorite non-life story, but least favorite decade, but right. They did a pretty good job of it.
I used to read comics so much when I was a kid, and I didn't, you know, I had very limited budget when I was in high school, so I'd read the same comics over and over. Same thing my dad would buy me, like I'd read the same comics over. So like, when we talk about Spidey villains, they're not necessarily the best villains, but they're the ones that I read over and over because I only had so many comic books. But I remember I was in college in the 90s, and I went to a comic book store for like the first time in 5-6 years. And I walked in, I'm like, hey, I haven't read any comics for a while. I was going to school and, I don't know what's going on. I'm like, you know, what should I pick up, you know, and start back into comics. So like, well, what do you like? And I'm like, well, I like Spider-Man. And they go, okay, do you know about the clones? And I was like, what? And like, well, and they started explaining it. And then I was like, they could see the look on my face. And they're like, never mind. Don't read Spider-Man right now. They're like, if you don't know about the clones, you don't know. Just forget it.
It's the Fonzie jumping the shark version of Spider-Man, I think. They didn't know what to do. So they're like, well, let's have all these clones. But you're right. They weaved in the story early on in the life story.
Yeah. And I think the way they tell it here is kind of what happened in the Spider-Man comics, which is they tried to pull off that for like the past 10 years, you thought this was Peter Parker, but it wasn't. It was a clone of Peter Parker. The real Peter Parker's been like in, you know, somewhere else. And there's all these clones. And which one's the real Peter Parker?
Yeah. And is, I think it's, and not in this life story, but I think his parents get brought into it too. And it's super confusing because it kind of upends the whole, my Aunt May and Uncle Ben, and that's how I became Spider-Man. And it challenged that whole foundation. And that's why I think upset a lot of core fans. In the comics here, they stayed pure to it. You know, the big thing in the 90s is Harry dies saving Peter Parker / Ben Reilly /
right
clone.
Every clone.
Yep.
But it gives Peter an amazing opportunity to kind of like walk out of this job that he hates.
Right.
he's like trapped in Parker Industries, and it gives him a chance to, you know, I thought that was really cool, where he's like, he tells the clone, he's like, no, just go. And he knows that he's the real Peter Parker, and the other one isn't. But he's like, you just go be Spider-Man for a while, and you have this awesome life for a while. I've had it. I'm going to go take a break.
and then at the end, so Norman gets out of prison, and he thinks he's tricking Spider-Man, thinking he's a clone. But Spider-Man knew he wasn't, but made Norman think he was, and that got a little confusing.
Right.
But, yeah, it was good. It was probably, it was good. It was some good moments there, but it's hard to make really good moments out of it when I have a bad memory of the comics version of that whole clone story. But it was still well done.
Yeah, I'm 100% with you. I think it was the weakest of the individual comics for me too, for the same reason. That was a moment when I really wasn't in. And then I got to 2000s, like, oh yeah, I was reading Spider-Man again big time with this dude, Moreland.
Yes. You had Moreland in there. That whole thing.
Spider totems.
They brought that in. We didn't go. We got to go back. I think it was in the 90s. Jessica Jones had a cameo. Did you see that?
Yeah.
That was good. So they were kind of getting together because I think him and MJ were on the outs at that point.
I was a little disappointed with Spider-Man because he had twins sitting at home with his wife, and he's like,
he's like, Jessica Jones, how's my favorite private dick?
This is a business funny. Call, Peter, but I'll be by later.
That's right. That was
a little much for me.
It was a little too much. I would agree with you on that.
I was like, Chip Zdarsky, that did not happen. That is not a piece you need. That did not happen in the comics.
That didn't happen. You didn't need to put that in there. But you're right. Then the 2000s, they bring in Moreland. They have the registration act, so to speak. So the tension between him and Tony Stark is there. That was really good.
Right. Except, you know, Spider-Man's much older at this point, and it's Civil War is happening.
Yes. Yes. Civil War's happening. And he owns Parker Industries, so it's like a big moral difference because he's like, I make like communications equipment and adhesives, you make weapons to kill people. So there's a whole duality there of we're the same, but we're really not, because your stuff falls into the wrong hands and people die, and then mine, so they make better adhesives. I don't care.
Right. Do you remember how tough Moreland was in the comics though? Because that was, I mean, they get through his story here in one issue, but that went on for years of him hunting Spider-Man, because it was him and this family of vampires that they drain from what they call the animal totems. People who have animal-based powers. They drain all of their energy and their life force. And he's just, and like, there's like, he just kept coming after Peter and kept coming after him. It's like, there's nowhere to run. There's nowhere to hide. It's crazy.
It is, because you knew in the comics as the reader, like, if he ever got caught, he was going to like kill Spider-Man. Like, there was a sense of finality to it because of what, and he knew he couldn't beat him. There was that fear.
Right. It was like the opposite. This dude was spinning the web to try and trap the spider.
There you go. I like that. He just flipped
flipped the script. Hey, I'm J. Michael Straczynski. I just take what you think and I live it.
I live it. That's right. Yeah, it's true.
J. Michael Straczynski is the George Costanza of comic writers. Like, whatever your instinct is, do the opposite.
Do the opposite. Swim upstream. Swim downstream.
Speaking of swimming upstream, Spider-Man, a lot of his villains were all like animal based, but he never fought it. It would have been cool to have a villain, the salmon. He's always swimming.
Was that a crossover with Aquaman?
What's your power? I'm always going against the grain.
I'm always going upstream.
So Moreland was actually, that was a story that I really liked, and I liked that they brought him in. And at this point, you know, Peter's again much older, so I'm like, how the heck is he gonna get away from this guy at this age? And then they do tie in the Civil War, which is like, it's kind of cool because you see like old man Luke Cage pops out.
Yes.
He's out there to fight. But like, because they're all like older heroes, but it actually was more, I think, a little more meaningful to me than when I read like the original Civil War, because in the original Civil War, you see like the Registration Act, and it's like all these younger heroes are sort of on the periphery, and they're just kind of there. And this makes it more clear of what I think that comic, the Civil War intention was here's these older established heroes, and they're so, you know, they're so ingrained that whatever they do is going to be hugely influential to the next generation of heroes. But right. Like when you read Civil War, it kind of looks like, yeah, you know, Spider-Man's like 25 and this other hero is 21. It's like this really makes it clear that like Captain America's been around for 30 years and these kids grew up like who are heroes now idolizing Captain America and know who Iron Man was and know that. And just the way they illustrate it to like with Cloak and Dagger where they look like they're teenagers and Luke Cage looks like he's an old dude. You're like, oh, yeah, they really were this group of heroes that were struggling not just in the streets, but for the ideals of what the next generation was going to believe in.
Yeah. No, you're right. That's if it was intentional or not, it was just brilliantly done by the writers because they took things and said, how can we make some of these greatest hits better, knowing that there's a continual timeline? So we talked about the Venom symbiote and why Spider-Man had it. And this is, you're right. It when I read it, I was like, oh, I guess that's what they meant to mean with Civil War. The original story is the older heroes rebel against it. And the younger heroes, you know, Tony Stark tries to get him on board with it because he knows the older heroes are just, they're not just going to, you know, submit to that way of life.
Right. They're just set in their ways and they have their own ideals and you can't, it's harder to influence that than just grab the youth and be like, hey, I can get you behind this cause.
Well, or they fought against, because they were older, they fought against real, like we've seen real oppression.
Right.
Like we know what it happens. Like this is it again. And you guys don't see it.
Yeah.
So we're fighting against it. So part of it's set in your ways, but part of it's a good kind of moral dilemma around, you know, who controls, like, do you want the government to control what we're doing? Like, that's not right.
Right.
They fight against that.
And in this comic, you get, like we talked about in the 60s, you get a Captain America who's already been in the Vietnam War where he was seeing things going on. He's like, this is whatever the America is doing, I'm just here, I got to protect people because that's the ideal.
Right. That's the overall thing of a superhero. You protect, it's like the Hippocratic Oath with doctors.
Right. Unless you're Tony Stark and Reed Richards.
Or Doctor Strange.
Doctor Strange. We got to get through this because we got to talk about that No Way Home trailer, which is hilarious with Doctor Strange.
Sidebar, I'm shocked. Like Strange and Spider-Man, even the comics they got together, I didn't see him in here once.
No.
Did I miss that or no? No, I don't think he was. I was a little surprised about that. But yeah, we got to wrap up.
He didn't pop in, but I think you know, we'll wrap up with the last decade, which is kind of cool because it was a culmination of like everything that came before. And it's like this giant what if. And the giant what if is what if the Marvel Civil War happened this way and the heroes have just been fighting each other for so long that everybody's like, this sucks. And Dr. Doom's like, well, if I can stop them from all fighting, everybody will just let me be in charge.
Right.
Like Doom swoops in and now is in charge of the world.
Yes, yes. Which was kind of like what was it the Dark Avengers where Norman Osborn ran everything in the comics, right? So it's kind of a play on that.
But
I think.
Where I felt like it's like if I'm thinking about this being like a what if of like why did that happen? And they say it happened because the war went on so long. And it's like why did the war go on so long? The Civil War in this versus the original series. This doesn't have the whole unmasking of Spider-Man and Spider-Man switching sides and sort of that being a big deal and a linchpin moment in the Civil War that made things turn. And then I guess Captain America just never gives up to Tony Stark. I don't know. And they didn't
have their moment, right? Their moment in the comic books was the Spider-Man piece, but also I think Giant Man dying or Goliath, I suppose. But, but I don't think they ever showed that. But you're right. They went on for so long, Dr. Doom was just able to swoop in.
Right? Now Doom's in charge of everything.
And that's right.
Spider-Man, one last time, to the rescue.
To the rescue. That was the end of his life story, which I thought was very well done. I like the little flash sideways, I suppose, with MJ at the end, because he got to bring her back in at the end. Like, that was a great touch.
Yeah. A couple big moments. I love that they brought Miles Morales in. That was pretty awesome.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, that was great. Well done there.
They bring in the whole Superior Spider-Man arc.
Yeah.
Where Doc Ock takes over Spider-Man's brain in a new and cool way.
Yes. That was a good thread. Again, greatest hits of that era. Those are all the right moves there. And bringing Miles Morales in was amazing because he basically, just like in the comics, he can carry on the legacy. That's how he ended it in the comic here or in the graphic novel here. Right.
And then the symbiote gets two big moments, which is awesome and shocking.
Right.
I love it. I don't know.
Which it should, because that's an iconic part of Spider-Man's lore,
right,
is the symbiote.
So track Spider-Man through his whole life. So you were a fan. I'm glad you liked it.
I did, Joe. I loved it. It was very well done. So I give it a 10 out of 10, honestly. It was fantastic.
Nice.
Dare I say amazing?
Amazing. Spectacular.
Yes. Spectacular.
Superior.
Spider-Ham.
Was it nonstop?
It was nonstop. It was. It was really good.
Cool. Well, that is Spider-Man Life Story by Chip Zdarsky and Mark Bagley. And if you'd have a Comixology subscription, it is free with your subscription. So check it out, people, if you have time.
Yes.
All right. So we're going to, we promised, and we've only got a few minutes left, Mark, but let's get through your favorite. I gave you the six because there's the Sinister Six.
Yeah.
Let's go through top six Spider-Man villains from your memory bank.
All right. Are you going to do yours too? Because I'm going to go to 6-1.
Okay. Go for it.
All
right. Start with number six.
It's number six for me is Hobgoblin.
Hobgoblin. Okay.
Yes, because I remember, of course, Harry being it, but Flash Thompson in the comics was Hobgoblin, and it just totally made me realize, like, what the heck's going on? It was my first big, like, plot twist comic that I have a memory of was when they're like, Flash Thompson, he's Hobgoblin? What's going on? And he really wasn't. But anyway, so I just have I like, for him, he was the scariest at the time villain for me. So that's why he's number six.
Okay. Well, as you get down on my list, mine are more based on costume. Because like I said, I got into Spider-Man when I was real young. And it's like, there's a couple that, the Beetle. Remember the Beetle?
Yeah, I do.
Dude, he was
Is that your number
favorites.
Six?
Yes. Because he had
got
the
it.
Sweet armor and the helmet. And even though it's all fully metal, he could like fly around. And I was like, this dude's like Iron Man. Except with worse armor, but it looks so cool because it's like blue and green. It had that cool color scheme to it.
If you say one of your sixes slide, I'm leaving the podcast immediately.
No, but number five is still a costume pick for me.
Okay. Number five for me is Scorpion.
Scorpion.
Like, nice. Classic, tried and true, basically secretly funded by J. Jonah Jameson. Like, I love all the themes there. So Scorpion's number five for me.
Okay. Scorpion was on my list. Scorpion is actually number four. On my list.
Good.
And I remember a moment that I love from the comics where Scorpion, he curls his tail up really tightly like a spring and leans back and launches himself into the air and flies.
Like, it's like, how does that happen? Doesn't make any sense.
You're defying all laws of physics. You have this scorpion tail that like stings Spider-Man, but I can curl it up like and then shoot my ass into the air.
I love how it makes no sense, but when you watch you read the comics, you're like, oh, that totally makes sense. Like, he can do that.
I loved it. I loved it.
So who's your number five then?
My number five is Shocker.
Ooh, yes.
I love Shocker with his padded suit and his vibration powers and his like, just he get his fists and he like vibrate armored trucks open and blast them.
I like that better than Electro. That's a so that's a good one.
Shocker, there's actually a comic book later, and it's a more recent comic, and like I said, the more recent writers, you know, try and get into a little thing, and it's like basically Shocker. Shocker is an older, like he's in his 40s, and he's got kind of like he's an NFL player. He's just got so many concussions from all of his shock powers because they're all based off of like vibrating and like creating sonic shock waves.
So he's got like CTE.
Yeah.
All right. Number four for me is Kingpin.
Kingpin.
Yes. Classic.
I almost put Kingpin on my list, but Kingpin I always associated more with Daredevil for some reason.
I could see that. Yep. Yeah. All the Gang War series crossovers. Again, part of my peak of my reading for Spider-Man. I loved all the Gang War stuff and Spider-Man was in there and Kingpin had a hard part of it. So yeah, Kingpin's number four. And then you said Scorpion is number
Scorpion
four for you.
Is four for me. Yep.
Three is Venom.
Venom.
Got to go with the classic, my favorite. So that's three. What's your third one?
Number three for me, I guess maybe I've got more classic ones than you do for they go back for the is Mysterio.
Yes, it was so hard for me to leave him off the list, but yes, he was probably number six or number seven.
He's on your honorable, his other's not named, honorable mention.
Yes, honorable mention, he's definitely on there.
Very cool costume, but also very cool different powers where he's got these powers of illusion to where like if you can't fight him with brute strength or even with like Spider-Man, it's like agility, no, brute strength, no. It's like it's this mastery of illusions and mind tricks that are that are combined with his fishbowl head. Just I used to love it because I was like anybody can be Mysterio.
Yes, greatest quips from Spider-Man when he's fighting him. You know, so love the fishbowl head and you're right. Any failed magician that can be a supervillain. Is pretty high on my list.
Which was me because I worked at the magic store.
That's an honorable mention. So I can see how you do that. Number two is Morbius.
Morbius.
Yes. So a Moreland kind of theme there, but he's definitely number two for me because of the similar thing. He was Moreland before Moreland.
Okay.
What was your number two?
Number two for me. Now we're getting serious. Uncle Otto. Octopus.
Yes. It was so hard for me to leave him off, but I was trying to think about it's almost like he's in a different, like with Vulture, like he's in a different Mount Rushmore of you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I thought Sinister Six is different, but at Mount Rushmore, he'd be on that list. Yeah, definitely.
Mount Rushmore. We'll talk about that at the end. There's a definite Mount Rushmore of
Spider-Man. Yeah. Yeah. All
right. Who's your number one?
And then number one, we've already talked about him, is Kraven. Kraven the Hunter. Yes. Just because of the memories I have of the story, it gets back to when you asked me what story do I remember first, it's that story, and it's also my most memorable one. How about you?
My number one, I went a little different direction. I overthought it or I underthought it, I'm not sure. But I like where I landed. My number one Spider-Man villain is J. Jonah Jameson.
I almost put that on there. That's so true.
Dude, he's the classic foil for Spider-Man forever. Yes. Because not only does he hate Spider-Man to the point where he creates Scorpion and other villains try and kill Spider-Man, he's also his boss and Spider-Man gets a paycheck from him.
Oh, man.
Get me pictures of Spider-Man. Because he was a foil not just for Spider-Man, but also he was one of Spider-Man's bigger villains and thorns in Spider-Man's side, but also one of Peter Parker's biggest thorns in his side.
That is so true. That's a good call out. See, that's the thing where I was like, a Mount Rushmore, he'd be on it.
You wouldn't put him in a Sinister Six because he would fight, right? But
right.
I'm like, if it's villains, I mean, I thought about it. I'm like, I can't imagine Spider-Man without J. Jonah Jameson as a foil.
Right. Yep.
That's just not Spider-Man anymore to me.
Yeah. So real quick for me, Joe, the Mount Rushmore is J. Jonah Jameson, Doc Ock, Vulture, and I have a hard time with the fourth one. I guess it would be Green Goblin. I'll go that way.
Yeah, you'd have to put Green Goblin on there.
So that'd be my Mount Rushmore of like top most iconic. But yeah, I think you had a good Sinister Six there, though. I think they'd both be pretty awesome to go to battle against. You could have Kingpin fight J. Jonah Jameson. You could have the Scorpions fight each other.
Jameson would take him springing. Down in the press. Would take him down in the press.
That's right.
Get me pictures of Spider-Man.
That's right. Oh, my gosh. That's good stuff. Put Betty Brant in there.
Betty Brant. And what was the other dude's name who worked at the
BBC? Jimmy Olsen?
No. Jimmy Olsen, Robbie. What was Robbie's
last name? Riley? Oh, Robbie. Yeah, Robbie Robertson, I think is his name.
Robbie Robertson.
I think it's Robbie Robertson.
Sounds like a witness protection name. I was like, don't ever trust anybody whose first name is also part of their last name. Like,
exactly.
Like Jack Jackson. No.
Jack, no. Yeah. Martin Martinson. No, we're not going to trust that guy. That was fun, Joe.
That was a good time, Mark. So you want to take us out with the classic Spider-Man theme?
Yeah, I'll just do double flips. And what is it? Spider-Man. Spider-Man. Does whatever a spider can. Spins a web. Any size. Catches thieves. Just like flies. Look out. There goes a Spider-Man.
Awesome.
Squip, squip.
All right. Well, man, thanks for joining us and talking about Spider-Man. Hopefully we'll catch you again soon when we've got another Marvel theme going on. But, man, really appreciate it. It's I always, you know, I always learn something from you when we're talking about Spider-Man. So thank you. I do.
Same here, Joe. No, thank you. This is a gift. This is great.
All right.
And cheers, everyone. If you've got a comic you'd like to hear us talk about, please let us know on Twitter, at Casual Comics Guy, at our blog, casualcomicsguy.com. Or on our Facebook page, Casual Comics Cast. So until next time, Stay safe and stay frosty, people.